This world is beyond cruelty. You've been fighting the Harkonnens for decades. My family's been fighting them for centuries. They were massacred. Alongside my father.
Your father didn't believe in revenge.
We believe in Fremen.
Let me fight beside you.
Reload!
Da, 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world got crazy!
Are you serious? Wait,
it's in germs!
Yeah. It's showtime.
That's the only time I'll do that this episode, don't worry.
Not me. I'm doing it 27.
My wife hates it when I do that, so that one's between us, man fam.
What was the Inception one? Do you remember when that was the noise?
It was just wah.
Wah.
They're both Hans Zimmer. Welcome in, man fam. It's Dune 2 time. Dune Part 2.
Mm-hmm. Dune to others as you would have done to you. That's the way I look at it, personally.
I mean, I saw The Chosen.
It's one of my favorite
season finale in the theater this weekend. So,
yeah,
me by myself, which was ironic.
The Chosen. That's great. Actually. If that's your deal, that's your deal.
Maybe
that's
I am awesome. The Chosen.
It's not my deal.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So welcome in. Long time coming. This is a movie that's been delayed multiple times. Talking about it forever. Of course, talked about the first one. If you haven't listened to our podcast, of course, still available. I'm Kent. Joined by Brian. Richard will be joining us here in a little bit. But I'll pass it off to you, Brian, to start. When we talk about experience and we talk about Dune, I mean, honestly, where do you begin? Because this is such a big thing. And that's been the question, I guess, for directors forever is where do you begin right. with Dune? Your background on Dune, I know you're a big sci-fi book nerd, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Refresh the listener sure. on that.
My dad was an aspiring science fiction writer growing up. I grew up at what now we would call a Comic-Con, but at that point we called science fiction conventions. Dune is this sort of Mount Rushmore kind of massive part of science fiction that I tried to read like three or four. I think I had tried four times and not been able to do it. It's very dense. The characters are, there's a lot of weird names on characters, which isn't that big of a deal now if you've watched Game of Thrones or whatever else, but it was kind of tough for me at 12 or whatever, even into high school. And I knew that I was going to like the book. It just was a matter of getting through it. And I'll be honest, a lot of the parts that were kind of tough to get through are what's in this movie versus what's in the first movie. I didn't totally know what the split was going to be first movie to going into this one. But I did an audiobook that had a full cast, which is kind of hit or miss for me. Sometimes that's a positive and sometimes I don't really dig that. But in this instance, it really helped. I did an audiobook right before COVID because the first Dune was supposed to come out maybe in May. I don't remember anymore, but pretty soon after COVID started and then ultimately didn't come out until like October of 21, I think. So I loved the book. I thought it was great. I haven't read any of the sequels. I don't know that I am going to read any of the sequels at this point. It's a really interesting world. We have said for many, many years it's an unfilmable book. And one of the reasons for that is because it's an older book that so many of its great ideas have been stolen by other films and other directors. George Lucas, maybe top of that list. There's so many things in Star Wars that are, you know, inspired by Dune. And so it's partly that makes it hard for it to be a filmable movie and filmable book and a few other things. And then obviously we saw the David Lynch version, which makes a bold tries. It tries really hard. It's just not a very good movie. First Dune is one of my favorite movies of this century. I've rewatched it. I mean, it's gorgeous. You know, I was very impressed with the way that he was able to adapt, again, what has long been considered an unfilmable book. So I was excited for the second part, and yeah, it did not disappoint. I'm curious to see what our thoughts are going to be here on this one, especially not necessarily in contrast to the first one from 21, but how it works together, like in conjunction with that.
Yeah, man, I'm not nearly the nerd you are when it comes to the literature, science fiction stuff. I don't think I've ever read a sci-fi book that's not related to a movie in some way, or Star Wars or something. And so, yeah, you've got me beat there. So it's good to know that this had your seal of approval in terms of the adaptation. I was always wondering that. I did a little bit of research on this, though, before diving in. I did watch Alt-Shift-X's video on YouTube that goes into comparing the book and the movie. It's very well done. I would suggest that for anyone looking for more background on Dune. But so that's what I did. Did not have a lot of ideas about where this could go, to be honest with you, story-wise, but I was just so excited for Denis to have another shot at this and to learn the lessons that he did with Dune 1, apply those things, improve on them. The cast is older, better now. And you don't get a second chance at a lot of things in life. And this feels like a second chance at an already great movie. This story, you said it. I mean, it's dense. It's very dense. Mm-hmm. We've said this a lot with trilogies on the show multiple times in discussing them. It's that the second one's the hardest one to do because it's the middle of the story, right? It's the boring stuff. You get the intro, then you get the big end. But the middle one, it's tough to crack. And I am with you in terms of the material of Dune that this one kind of relies on. The source material is not my favorite. The Bene Gesserit stuff, the melding with the Fremen stuff isn't my favorite. What's my favorite is the spice production.
Yeah,
and the Harkonnens. I love that. I loved the updated version of all that without getting into spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get Richard in here to give his general thoughts before we dive too deep. But man, it really did feel like Denis was just crushing this movie. I mean, James Cameron needs to be on watch after watching this thing. Like Avatar is probably the only thing, and I say this as a compliment to Cameron, the only thing that I've seen other than this that feels like I've never seen that before or doesn't feel rendered out of a computer and it's not physical. It's something different that's kind of going on there with a lot of the CG and practical effects, this way they blend them. I mean, this is just like the peak in terms of that I've seen in science fiction. So wow, you know, pretty blown away just by the spectacle of it without talking story, acting, all that stuff. Just the experience, the spectacle of going to the theater, packed out, sitting in the big Dolby cinema, and my seat shaking with every big moment of sandwormness. I mean, it was awesome, Brian.
I think both of these things are true. This is a great movie. The first one is a much more interesting movie to me. And I think some of that is like the book translation. It's like this movie spends a whole lot of time on the politics of this universe and stuff, not to mention the religion of it. And, you know, like we've talked about religion on the show at times and various and how it's presented in film. Sometimes that can be really interesting. I find the religion piece of this to be pretty engaging. The political part of it and how those two things blend together is a little dull for me. And then the other thing that I would add to it is like I rewatched the first one twice this week because I rewatched it and then randomly, very surprising to me, my Cooper was like, "Hey, can I watch Dune?" And I was like, "I mean, you can. I don't know that you're gonna dig it. You know, like this is it's pretty dense and it's not like a Marvel movie, but like, if you want to watch it, we can watch it." So we rewatched it for me the second time in about 3 days or whatever. And then he was with it. He wanted to go. So I took him to see this one. was pretty surprising to me that he wanted to do that. But I think the cinematography and stuff on this is unbelievable. It's a lot of sand. It's a lot of kind of blank landscapes that look awesome because Denny is a daggum master and it's filmed so beautifully. The first movie has more of those like Blade Runner 2049 kind of colors to it. And I love that too. And so and maybe I think I probably love
and
that.
And you have Caladan in the first one too.
So yeah, Caladan helps a little bit. The city in Arrakis gets a little bit of play in the first movie that it doesn't.
I mean,
in
dude,
this
watching
one.
The first one again and that shot the when they first arrive to like I don't forget what the city's called in Arrakis when the Atreides first arrive there and they're flying their orthocopters over the city for the first time. I mean, yeah. That whole shot with the drums coming in is just, like, gives me goosebumps thinking about it. Like, it's so awesome. I didn't remember it from the first one, but that shot in particular just completely blew me away on the rewatch.
Yeah, and even, like, the technology of, because I'm with you, I think the Harvester stuff is really cool.
It's so good. Oh, my gosh, dude.
And some of the parts of this movie that are the most thrilling to me involve, like, the attack on the Harvesters and then the final battle is incredible and everything. All that stuff is really great. First movie, you get the introduction of like the helicopters and the scope of all all the machinery and stuff and the science part of the sci-fi stuff. It's just again, I'm certainly not saying that this is not a really good movie. It is. It's in a lot of ways, I think you make the case this is a better movie than the first one. I would simply make the case that I enjoy watching the first one more than I enjoyed watching this one on the first watch. That could change on second watches and third watches and stuff. The more time I spent with the politics side of it, the less I was interested in that aspect of it. And I don't know if that's because I kind of knew some of it from reading the book.
Which politics do you mean?
It's just, again, it's the combination of the politics with the Bene Gesserit religion. Uh-huh. Aspects again. I am interested in that. I think there's a lot being said by the book and the movie and the sort of missionary aspect to the Bene Gesserit and the way that they have evangelized and the way that religion can be weaponized and all that. I thought it lost a little bit of steam for me with the introduction of Fed Ralpha. I thought he was great. I thought he was great in this, in that role, which I was not really looking forward to. He's not my favorite actor and I did not enjoy the Elvis, interpretation and whatnot, but I thought he ruled in the role. The time spent with his introduction in the gladiator ring, and then we jump directly from that into 10 or 15 minutes of the Bene Gesserit and this storyline that's going to become a thing in the third movie. I kind of lost some steam for me in that moment. And that kind of played a little bit into the politics and the blending of politics and religion and stuff. But it does, when you read this book and then you watch this movie, I think it gives you some, not appreciation because it's done so horribly, but you can kind of see why Lucas felt like he could do that in Phantom Menace, that we could spend 30 minutes on the politics of the galaxy and whatnot. It's just done so poorly, but knowing how closely tied his stuff is to Dune, and then you see this movie or you read this book, and you're like, yeah, I kind of get why he felt like he could go that route.
There's no Bene Gesserit here. That's not what happened.
We're joined by Richard Barden now, so on Mad About Movies, big Dune head. Mm-hmm. I know that for sure. Richard, how's it going, my friend? How'd you enjoy your screening of Dune?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot more than the first one.
Oh. I was saying the opposite.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I like this one more. So not the target demo for this, but I'm not into sci-fi and stuff, but this kind of sci-fi is kind of like outside of my you know, the kind of mythological world building and all that. I get why people like it. I think that's cool. It came in halfway to your point, Brian, around the politics and stuff, but I just can't ever fully get all in on something like that. But I thought this had, it had a cinematic language that was much more of like a classic epic versus an adaptation of, I have not read the books. So I can't speak to this too much, but like, instead of just a really, okay, we're doing the second part and we're going to go super, we can now get a little more granular into the Dune of it all. This felt, there's that, I'm sure, but also it was kind of in language with a lot of other, like I thought about, obviously there's sand, a lot of Lawrence of Arabia and stuff like that with this that I think it's in conversation with, like, and that's a cool place for a big, you know, movie that's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars to be. Not that everything has to be super film nerdy, but this pulled it off in a way that I thought, you know, we're talking about Enemy last week, Ken, in the VIP feed, and it's like there's so much Hitchcock to that. And to this, it felt more than the first one to me, a reaction or a purposeful intent of Denny taking the source material and doing something really epic with it. It felt like a classic epic. Mm-hmm. And in some of it, just visually in the, not necessarily the effects, but just in the way some of the things were really framed and even the style of acting and things like that. It felt cool to be in the theater seeing it. Sorry about the sneeze. But yeah, so I for that, I don't know. Maybe I've been watching more. I have been watching more like older movies than I certainly was when the first one came out a couple years ago. So maybe that heightened it a bit, but I don't know. I just really enjoyed it aesthetically, and like the mechanics of how it was built worked for me.
Yeah, I get what you're saying about Lawrence of Arabia. I assume it's not just because it's the desert setting, but because thematically it kind of lines up with
exactly how he turns, you know, how that character becomes more lead complex.
The people, the whole thing. Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah.
Right.
There was a lot of that, which I think from what I limited know about the book is I think Herbert was influenced by a bit, but I just felt,
I mean, you see the influence just in the way they frame Atreides with the scarves. I don't want to call them that because that's very Deppy, but you know, in the wind and all that. I mean, that's definitely, you know, Lawrence of Arabia. It harkens back the image in your mind. I love that comparison. I felt the same way. Denis feels like a guy that can do anything. I mean, every time he pulled a wide shot in this movie to show the scale of what was kind of going on, I don't know, it would just pull back to kind of this God's eye view every now and then and show just how small these people are in comparison to the ship or in comparison to the sand dune or the worm. I just love the way he used scale in this movie. I mean, the light in this, the sun.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he put people against the sun, the shot of the Harkonnen soldiers, like on the jetpacks. It was one of the first action sequences in the movie, I think. But when they just turned on those jetpacks and started floating, I was like, oh, Denis, come on, bro. Take it easy. Mm-hmm. We're 10 minutes into this thing. We got 2 hours left. Oh my gosh. It was pretty awesome. Let's discuss a little bit more about the story now that Richard's in the fold. I was not aware of a lot that was going to happen in this. I knew the actors that were involved, didn't know their roles, didn't know where this was going to go story-wise. And I got to say, the biggest disadvantage that this does have, in my opinion, is that George Lucas got to it first. And a lot of it plays out similarly to how Star Wars plays out with the main characters. But, you know, that's not the fault of Denis. That's more George Lucas, like you said earlier, sees the opportunity and thinking he could do this his way. But yeah, I felt a lot of those comparisons, and we're getting spoilery now for Dune 2. But go see it in case you haven't been able to tell what we think of it yet. So spoilers coming up now. I didn't know that Atreides was going to be half Harkonnen, but it totally made sense to me because I was watching the first movie. I'm like, oh yeah, his mom's a witch, so he's half witch. But I never thought about what his mom's other half was, right? And so that reveal, that whole way that whole plays out, felt like a very I am your father type of reveal in the second movie. But it's a great one. I did not see it coming at all. And I guess, Brian, where Atreides is the enemy in the next one with how this plays out with Zendaya's Michi?
So I haven't read the other books, but the that's the setup here, and this is a huge part of the, obviously it's a huge part of the books, but it's a huge part of this movie. I thought it was done quite well too, without harping on it so much that it just becomes kind of, hey, we get it, you know. This is something I was really interested in, is how he was going to pull it off in this book, in this movie, because the book does pretty extensively go into, Paul knows that if he ascends to power,
people will die.
Yes, that it will become, I believe it's described in the book as a holy jihad, mm-hmm. of the Fremen people essentially storming the galaxy, and in his name, even, mm-hmm. because he is, you know, he's a messiah figure. That's obvious in this whole thing. I was curious as to how that was going to play out here in the movie, because to me is a little bit of overkill in the book. Like, there is a point in the book where you're like, hey bro, I get it. Like, you don't have to keep explaining this, you know. He almost goes so lightly on it here that it's like you could kind of miss it if you're not really focused up until right until essentially the last like shot of the movie with them jumping on the transports and heading off into the galaxy and whatnot. So yeah, the I don't know that it's necessarily Atreides are the villains moving forward, but again, I haven't read the book. It's more about what are your followers going to do in your name, essentially. And there's a whole lot of, obviously there's a lot of allegory there, biblical allegory and or even just like, you know, maybe less biblical allegory and just allegory towards like 20th century and 19th century Christianity, you know, but or the Crusades, even all these other things, yeah. But regardless, I don't know that I would necessarily say they are the villains moving forward.
I don't know if crossing up. Yeah, I probably used the wrong term. Harkonnen, I would say like,
no, I'm with you. I'm like, with you, but yeah,
cinematically antagonist.
Yeah, and it's a huge turn, and done very well here too. Huge turn when you find out that he is both Atreides and Harkonnen, because that like really mm-hmm. jacks up the whole villain hero sort of narrative that we're working with in the book and in the movie, and then it kind of it muddies the water, which is obviously the intention. It's a great twist in the writing, and I felt like done very well here as well.
Man, I love the Harkonnen stuff.
Yeah,
there were times where I was like, can you cut back to the see what's going on with bubbly fat guy and see all that. I mean, I just, there's something about it. It's so kind of grotesque, but you also can't look away, you know? Mm. They're so vile and violent mm-hmm. all the time. I thought the freaking, you mentioned it, Brian, but the gladiator sequence was awesome. I loved that.
I thought it was cool. I felt like it lost a little momentum for the movie itself. Like, the scene itself is great. It's really cool. I wish in hindsight, I know why he didn't do it, because we're already covering so much in the first movie. I might have preferred to have that character established in the first movie so that we can just carry through mm-hmm. once we get into the because he gets entered. It almost feels like late in the second act even. When he gets introduced.
I forgot. I kept waiting. I was like, yeah, 90 minutes in. I'm like, isn't Austin Butler in this movie?
Exactly. Exactly. And again, I think the scene was really cool. It almost, it's partly because it's like that chromatic black and white kind of look. Yeah. So it feels like a scene out of a different movie to me almost. And I think that's part of why I felt like, again, great
like
scene.
Mad Max.
It's just kind of like, is this it? It bogged me down for the movie itself. Great, again, great scene. I actually, before you got on, Richard, I was saying I wasn't super looking forward to Austin Butler. I thought he was great in that. Yeah. He played that character so wonderfully. The way that it's done and introduced within that, I think I would have liked to have seen something done slightly differently, or even like bring him in earlier in the movie in the series at this point, I guess.
More Bautista. Need more Bautista in this. Bautista's probably great. I imagine he cut
terrifying.
Cut a lot of his stuff out, but I think what's his name? The savant guy. They cut him out too from mm-hmm. the first movie.
Yeah.
I don't know what their people are called, but the guys that roll their eyes in the back of their heads, the C-3PO mm-hmm. people, I'll call them that in this universe. But yeah, Bautista's awesome in this too. And I got real excited when he sort of gets crowned as the general or whatever, and okay, you have a bigger role now. So I was like, oh, great, more Bautista, and then he immediately Fs it up. In an awesome sequence with taking down the spice harvesters. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Atreides one and the Harkonnen one were awesome. Both those sequences were fantastic. And you had them crawling under the little legs of it, trying to get away and stuff. I mean, that was thrilling. That was fantastic. Yeah, that was great. Just the whole that, how that was all storyboarded out was just awesome. This, I imagine this will be up for infinite Oscars, but like mm-hmm. editing needs to be one with these. Yeah. And it stuck out to me on the first one, on the last rewatch this past week, and this one even more so. I mean, this thing is edited like beautifully too, because there's so much you can do with it. And you really do have to lead the audience kind of through this world through editing, and the way they do it is great. And I've noticed something too. Denis does not have bad background actors in these movies. And that's a feat. Like, he does not focus on them very much. And you, for world building, you would think you got to have a lot of like shots of people doing things and reaction shots and things like that. And that's where you can get some really bad stuff. And the way he's been able to avoid that, I just think is really impressive from a directorial standpoint. Every crowd shot in the first movie is just like little people. Like, he doesn't even, or they're like blurred out by sand or something. Like, it's really amazing how he's avoiding showing these people and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Because it's probably a crapshoot. Or you got to edit out their faces when they're making goofy faces or whatever. It's probably a nightmare. Oh my gosh, the Shai Hulud stuff in this.
Yeah.
Where do you fall on this, Brian and Richard? Because I think this could go either way for both of you guys. On riding the sandworm.
It's such a vital part of what makes Paul who he is, for as far as like his you know, messiahhood and whatnot. It's such a vital part of the end sequence, which is incredible. Like, the attack and the, mm-hmm. the assault on the Emperor's base is so cool. It does bog down a little bit. Once you've seen it. For me, it's just a little bit of like, man, that's a lot of sand. And I'm kind of like, all right, need something else to look at. Sandworms themselves are,
it's not that it's
so
a lot of
cool.
sand for me. It's just that it's kind of goofy.
Yeah.
And not a lot in this world is goofy.
Watching Javier like riding it the first time around is kind of goofball. It was one of those where I'm like, I'm not sure I super love how this is going, but I'm going to let it be because I know that this is going to be vital. And the sandworms themselves look so cool. It's just, this is part of what I mean of why I think I like the first one more than the second one and enjoy it is I almost wish that, I don't know how you would do it, because it's that first movie is 2.5 hours long and it's so beautifully well-paced and all these sorts of things. But like, I wish we could figure out a way to get some of these sequences into the first movie so that the second movie doesn't have so many of the ones that I feel like are a little bit draggy or sloggy. And again, it's not Denny's pacing. It's just there are these really important story points that you have to touch on. And as a result of all of them being in the second act to the beginning of the third act, let me put it this way. I found the first movie, and I still do, I watched it twice this week, find it to be thrilling from start to finish. I think it is such an exciting movie for a movie that really has a lot of like character study elements to it or character introduction parts and whatnot, which makes sense given it's the first of a trilogy and all this sort of stuff. But like, it's a thrilling movie to me from start to finish. This one is a little bit less, like the highs are probably higher than anything in the first movie. But the lows, I don't think there are any lows in the first movie. And I don't mean quality. Again, I just mean like story points. The lows in this one are like, okay, I know this is coming up, I guess, or like, all right, I've kind of had enough of this element. Like, let's get on to the next part of it. It's not pacing. It's just, there's a lot of story here that has to be covered. And that's just kind of the structure of the book. I mean, they fast forwarded through when Javier Bardem's character sends him off into the desert to like learn to walk the desert or whatever. That's 2 years in the book. Like and it's like maybe 3 minutes of the movie, you know? It moves very, very fast on these things. There's just a lot of story and really important plotting points that have to get done, and they are all in the second half of the book. And so they are all in this movie is how I would put it. So I like all the sandworm stuff. There is a point at which you're like, all right, I kind of get it. Like, we don't have to keep falling back on this.
Oh,
we're also having to do a whole lot of rituals. I hate rituals in movies.
Oh, man. It got to the point where I was like, if I see one more ritual, it might be one too many.
Yeah. I think that really is becoming my file scene or too many shirts or whatever else. I'm just like, I don't need any more rituals. Anyway, there's a lot of really great stuff here. Again, it's just, yeah, just, it's enough. That's enough rituals for me. Yeah.
I want to make clear. I'm all for the sandworms. I just thought writing the sandworms was really goofy.
It's so important for the end of it. It's like,
but it looks goofy.
It does kind of look goofy when they're doing it.
Can you not control the sandworms without lassoing and riding
the hooking
them?
Thing? Yeah. Yeah.
Can you not be like, use your Bene Gesserit powers to, you know, make peace with them or whatever? I don't know.
Sure.
But maybe, I don't know. That was a hard sell for me. Even though, you know, the way that was shot was awesome with Chalamet on there with the sand flying in his face and all that. I think that looked really good. Chalamet's won me over in this role. I was watching the first one and I was thinking to myself, I kind of wish Oscar Isaac was playing Paul Atreides. I kind of wish we'd see what he's got. But man, Chalamet's been good. Even though he looked like 5 years older in this one than he did in the first one, is there a lot of time that goes by between the two? Or is it supposed to be like, and the next day?
Yeah, no, like I said, like when he goes off into the desert with Michi, that's 2 years, I believe.
Okay, good.
In the book. Like, they have a kid in the book. His sister is a major part of the end. Like, she ultimately is the one that kills the Baron, and she doesn't even get born in this book, you know. So yeah, there's a lot of compression of a book that really isn't even all that long. It's just, yeah, there's a lot of compression here to get it into 5.5 hours or whatever over these two movies.
Yeah. I'm so glad this is a movie that we see in theaters on a big screen. It's making money, because this could so easily be just Amazon bought it and is going to make a series out of it. And that's the Dune we get. And we never really get this scope of an experience. I'm just really thankful for that. Because, I mean, you see, like, if this was even extended out, that there's a lot there and a lot of really interesting stuff and a lot of character study and a lot of great science fiction and effects and all that stuff. But I'm glad that this is the version we get. And, any version with Christopher Walken as the Emperor is the one we need.
I hadn't seen him in a few.
It's true.
He went in for me. He had to be in everything for 10 years, and then now nothing is the rule.
Yeah, it's like unless he pops up on SNL, he's not. You don't even see him anymore. That's it's kind of weird. I'm totally with you. Flo too. So I assume we're going to get more Flo in the next one. We can only hope. I can hope.
I think so. I think she's a big part of it. I mean, the ending where it does with he's essentially, for political reason, is choosing Florence Pugh over Zendaya, and how that will all play out. Yeah, that will be, I imagine, a big factor. Again, haven't read these sequel, but I may at this point. This was really interesting the way it's all done here.
So is Dune complete in terms of source material, and now we're moving on to the Dune sequels for Dune 3?
Yes.
Got it.
Yes. There are three other good Dune books, and then two more that Herbert wrote. And then there's a whole bunch of others that are canon, but weren't written by him. They're written by his son or Kevin J. Anderson is another guy who's like kept this thing going. But yeah, the next five technically are the like the real quote unquote Dune books, and this is where the third one is heading direct. Assuming the movie, the third movie will head directly into the second book, is what it looks like.
Awesome. I assume, Brian, also we're going towards Return of the King territory in terms of like the third one's just going to be a big war movie.
It's what it seems like to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that term in it. It's his messiah name. Those are called like the wars. They have those.
Got it.
Against it. So I think that'll be.
Brian mentioned like the Holy War earlier, essentially. Yeah. And I liked that Dune was the name of the planet, the Fremen's name for the planet, too.
Right.
Because I had heard complaints like, why is it called Dune? It makes it so dumb. It's like, okay. Yeah.
There you go, bud.
There you go, bud. Chill. All right. Here we go.
Sorry. I was just, I really hate badly named things and I apologize. Yeah.
It's all right. It's all right. I mean, this is a movie that everything comes together on. I mean, honestly, cinematography, direction, writing. I mean, this is an extremely hard thing to adapt. So got to give credit there.
Right.
Strong acting. I thought Rebecca Ferguson was great in this.
She's great, man.
She was the one that stood out to me. And then, you know, music, everything's just production design. Yeah. I mean, gosh, costume design. This is an A+ for me.
Yeah, it's going to dominate on the technical side, I would assume.
Yeah. Unless Megapolis is wild. Right. That's the only thing I can see.
Yeah. Sure. That's true.
I don't think Deadpool 3, maybe. Yeah. I don't think it will be. I just mean, that's the only thing I could see, like, touch it at this point.
All that wine money going to work.
We'll exactly. His passion of the Christ based on wine money.
I mean, that makes me think it's going to be, like, Wachowski level. Just like delusional. And just like a world that no one cares about or gets. And he thinks this is awesome. Like that's what I sense is coming, but you know, never doubt Coppola.
You guys need to read that Path to Paradise book. It's pretty wild. You guys definitely need to both.
Definitely hitting that before Megalopolis. Megapolis. Yeah. I don't even know. I'm sorry.
Yes.
There's no way to
Megamindopolis.
Know.
Right.
I think it's that one. Will Ferrell's involved.
Okay. There's a sequel to that came out this week. Had no idea that was a
Megamind.
I didn't know. I didn't know we were revisiting Megamind.
Have you heard about that Megamind billboard that's apparently still up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere. It's just, that's awesome. Great. We need to build a glass case around it. National Monument.
That's actually what's in the VIP lounge this week.
It's like, it's crazy. It's like, time capsule.
Come see it. Yeah.
All right. Let's hit a grade here for Dune Part 2 before we do weekly recommends. I already said it. A+ for me. Brian?
Straight A. May raise it up on a second viewing, but straight A for right now.
Richard?
I'm going to go straight A for me too.
You're lame.
All right. Sorry, dude. Hey, before we do weekly recommends, can I make an announcement?
Oh, sure. You're pregnant again?
Yep. You guys ready for this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode right here, right now, what we're doing.
Oh.
This is number 1,000. This is our 1,000th review episode.
So it's our last episode.
I'm mad about movie. Yep. See y'all later.
We did
Say all the bad words you want now.
Thank God.
Finally, we can rest. Yeah. So, yeah. Did the math on that this morning. Wanted to let you guys know, letting the listeners know as well. I think not next week, but the week after, we will be doing some sort of
special
episode. Celebratory list episode. So be on the lookout for that. But yeah, congrats, boys. 1,000 episodes.
That's amazing. At least 1,000 hours of talking to you boys. Mm-hmm. That's, you know. So like, 10 times this, we'll be experts.
Yeah, exactly. Gladwell rule. And like a good 75 to 100 of them are good.
maybe
yeah, definitely under that.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Definitely under. All right, let's hit a weekly recommend, boys.
Weekly recommends.
Let's start with Richard this week.
Yeah, I'm reading a book that's going to be a show out in a couple weeks. So I'm going to recommend it. I think this was a huge book like 7 years ago. I missed it, but it's a really fun read. I think Brian was certainly like, I think I'm really excited for the show on the Palouse here in a few weeks. It's A Gentleman in Moscow. Brian, have you ever read this or know about it?
I haven't. No.
So the plot essentially is there's this kind of aristocrat baron, Russian baron, who returns back to Moscow. He's this rich kind of very, you know, he spends his days like eating and writing poetry and stuff. Very like a effete rich guy. And he returns back to Moscow right as the Bolshevik Revolution's happening in 1919 or 1920. And, you know, the proletariat are just killing, you know, anyone that's an aristocrat, and the communist revolution begins. But he had written a poem that the working class liked. I know this sounds like it's really dense, but it's actually really not. And so instead of killing him, putting him up against the wall, they banish him to live in this hotel, in this little room in this very nice hotel in Moscow. And he spends 40 years there, and you just hang out with him. And Ian McGregor is playing the lead character, the Count. He's a Count. And he just like gets into little adventures around the hotel while the world is burning outside of him, basically, for years. And like hangs out with this little girl and gets involved with this actress. And it's kind of very Wes Anderson-y. The hotel just is kind of endless and has unlimited rooms and things like that. And it's kind of philosophically about like how to make the best of your circumstances. But yes, I'm excited for the show. Reading the book, I'm very excited for the show. It was a big bestseller. Didn't care about it at all. Happened to pawn it on Kindle sale or something, and I've really enjoyed it. So it's one of the best novels I've read in terms of just pure joy of reading in a long time. Read the book if you are inclined to do so. If not, then watch the show in a couple weeks. I think it's like March 30th it comes out.
Nice.
Awesome.
I didn't know anything about this. I saw a trailer for it on like TikTok or something this week. It was like, oh, okay, that looks interesting. I didn't know it was a book. I didn't know. I'd never heard of this.
So yeah. That's cool. Amor Towles, I believe, is the Amortowles is the author.
Sweet.
Excellent. What you got, Brian?
I recommend a show that it just dropped. Kind of surprised. Dropped its third season. I think it's probably the final season on Netflix. Called Sunderland Till I Die. It's a soccer show. I think the first season of this came out in like maybe 2017, like a while back. And it's great, man. I know I've recommended the show previously. Again, the third season just dropped like a few weeks ago, so that's why it's come back up. But Sunderland was a well-regarded top flight team, like meaning they were in actual EPL for long, long, long time and have been relegated. I think when the first season starts, they've been relegated three times or two times. I mean, they're well down the table in English football and are trying to kind of claw their way back into it. And
anyway, it goes great.
Yeah, it's a real heartwarming tale of... Yeah, I'm trying. Like, if you like Hard Knocks, it's Hard Knocks for an EPL team or an English soccer team, and it's great. The thing that I love, I know Richard has gotten super super into European soccer over the last few years, but to me, like, the thing that is so great about European soccer is the, especially with some of the like smaller clubs, or in this case, like a bigger small club, I guess, or a smaller big club. I don't know how you would look at it, but the connection to the community is really, it's similar to like, if you live in a tiny town, like how you might feel about your high school football team or something. I mean, it's such a, Well, it's such a ridiculous connection. Between,
the positive of that is how connected they are, right? These these non-London, non-Manchester, non-Liverpool places, right?
Exactly.
The negative to that is that the local economy relies on the team staying up in a lucrative league. So it's also like, I'm going to lose my job now because the soccer team I follow just got demoted.
Right. It's wild. So anyway, the third season just came out recently. There's only 3 episodes. And I think that's where they're wrapping it up, but it's, man, it's so good. If you're not into, I don't think you have to be into soccer to enjoy this. And actually, I think similar to Wrexham, if you are like even just kind of relatively open to the concept of soccer, it will teach you about the sport in an entertaining, interesting kind of way. I think because it's so much about the stories that are being told by, you know, through the players and the coaches and the fans and all that sort of stuff. But in a world where Ted Lasso is the biggest show on TV or on fake TV, you know, there may be more and more people that are willing to give soccer a shot that haven't in the past. And this is a really good one, I think.
You know the story why it's only 3 episodes, right?
So I don't know.
They were not planning to do it, and then they actually started having some success, and so they just quickly brought in the cameras and started filming it. Because they were like, it's been such a bummer every time we try to do this show. So it's looking good. Let's document this.
Let's start it out. That's cool. Yeah. It was really good. Really enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Kent, what about you, Guy?
Yeah, I got a TV series to recommend. It's a little documentary series called The Space Shuttle That Fell to Earth, about the Columbia.
Hmm.
BBC did this. I think they released it this year. Really good. 2003, it happened. We live in Dallas, Fort Worth, so kind of a locally adjacent event. And, I mean, brought back a whole flood of memories of that. And, you know, goes into the investigation of why the Columbia disaster happens, which a lot of it I didn't know. So yeah, good throwback, little historical recommend for you. Space Shuttle Fell to Earth, BBC. All right, there you go on the main feed this week, but we got more for you. Yeah, we have a whole nother feed. We do 2 episodes a week. Did you know that? This week, we're talking about Drop Dead Gorgeous. It was 25 years of that one. A lot of 1999 movies still to come for 2024. So be prepared for that. Just go to madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP, sign up, $5 a month, get you that. Plus, I think there's probably 1,000 episodes on that feed too for you. So check that out. madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. See you over there or at the Zip.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. The salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.